wand, bird in your arms, heavy, unwieldy, thorned with splinters. Call your friends to lighten your load. Then together you can rest for the winter. Friends, if you're like most people I know, you might be having trouble focusing your energy right now. Well, we've got a workshop for that. Starting October 1st, we're going to be taking a 10-week dive into the suit of wands. As you might remember, in magic, wands are the suit of change, the suit of transformation. And as you will discover in this episode, we can let change trample us, or we can learn to work with it. So in this 10-week workshop, we'll be learning how to focus our will, access our inspiration, and connect with Source to replenish our energy when we're feeling exhausted and we're going through all these major changes. These 10-week workshops are really fun. We've got a great community going. We'll learn all about the mysterious suit of wands, practice rituals, and we'll go in deep. Jupiter-level subscribers get this workshop free as part of their membership, or you can also grab it as a one-off by visiting betweentheworldspodcast.com. And if you go to the website, you can find out more if you're curious. We really hope that you join us. It's going to be really, really fun. Oh my gosh, you guys, I cannot wait to introduce you to our guest today. We have none other than the inevitable Adrienne Marie Brown, who we've literally been talking about on pretty much every episode of this season and maybe all seasons. So we feel just extremely lucky and so glad to have her here. If you don't know about her, she has written two brilliant books, Emergent Strategy and Pleasure Activism, which is all the talk of the town right now, because it's all about changing the world by connecting to pleasure and joy and beauty and creating a world in the name of that. She also has a podcast, How to Survive the End of the World, that she does with her sister, Autumn Brown. And she's a member of the Emergent Strategy Organization, which is essentially an activist group, which you should find out more about. She's going to tell you all about how to do that at the end of the episode. But without further ado, I just want to dive right in with you because we get juicy here. We're talking all about the Ten of Wands, otherwise known as oppression in the Thoth deck. So I know that you're going to want to hear her spin on that. We get into Octavia Butler, we get into eroticism, we get into why witchcraft, we get into ancestral altars, all of that. You're going to want to stay tuned, and let's go. Let's go fly between the worlds together. So, Adrienne, it is such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for being here. I have to say that you and your ideas have probably appeared on pretty much every episode in this season.
Oh, thank you. I love that.
It just applies so much to the wands. So we feel super blessed that you are here to talk about the Ten of Wands with us. So I love to start off just by learning a little bit about your relationship to the tarot, because I know on your Instagram feed, you're often presenting tarot. Like, what do you love about the tarot? How'd you get into it?
So I came across the tarot a little by accident. I had a couple of readings from people who were like movement witches who did tarot readings for me. And they were mind-blowingly accurate. And I remember being like, whoa, I don't understand how random cards are like understanding what's happening with me. So I got impressed with it and then kept on going about life. And then I had a friend who I was doing a training with, and we both were interested in learning more about Zen, like practices of Zen Buddhism. And he mentioned that there was this boot, this deck, the Osho Zen tarot deck. And he was like, I think that tarot deck might be a good way to sort of dip our toes into Zen concepts. So I was like, okay, cool. So we both agreed to buy the deck and we would be in a daily practice together. But he never got the deck. So then I had the deck and I took it with me on my first sabbatical in 2012 and just started pulling a card every day. I had no idea who Osho was. I had no idea if I was doing it correctly. I just went according to what was in the book. It was like, try a paradox, try calling, you know, pulling a card each day. And I fell in love. I was every day just so surprised and surprised by the idea that this inanimate deck of cards was somehow learning me. Like it really felt, you know, I started to get that feeling and all my logical doubt stuff was like, that's impossible. Like that, you know, but then I would, my thing is always with magic, just to test it out and try it for myself. And I always tell people that I'm like, if you don't, you know, if it doesn't work for you, like if astrology doesn't work for you, like don't read horoscopes. And if tarot doesn't work for you, then you don't need to get tarot readings. It's fine. Because the magic works for the people it works for. And I don't think the magic is affected one way or the other. But I found myself really deeply moved by how often it was accurate for me. So then I started right after the 2016 election. I had by that time been 4 years in daily practice of pulling the cards. I had acquired other decks. I got the Collective Tarot deck, which I also really loved. I got the, let's see, what was the next one? I got one of Serpent Fire's decks. I got the Slow Holler deck. So I just kept I started accumulating. And my friend Alta Star is like a tarot oracle. And so we had some moment where we were talking about decks and she was like, yeah, I've got 76. And it just blew my heart. Like I was like, oh, like I don't have to stop. Like I don't have to stop accumulating decks. And so right after the 2016 election, I had this strong impulse that our movement needed tarot guidance. And so I started pulling a card each day that was, I was still pulling my own cards, but then I started to pull a card each day that was at a, you know, for the movement, for collective movements trying to bring about justice, like what were something that we needed to be mindful of in that day. And the technology still worked, even though it was on social media for a huge wide swath of people. The feedback I overwhelmingly got was, wow, this is exactly the medicine I needed for this day. And I feel like during that time, then so many people started posting tarot readings online. And now I think, you know, it's just like there's so many tarot readers of Instagram, tarot witches of Instagram and stuff. And so I find it feels like it's become much more of a common link. You know, I think these things come and go and come and go, but I feel like we're in a really beautiful moment of abundant tarot now. And I'm actually creating my first deck now, which also feels like a sacred kind of work and really fun, like so much fun. So that's me and the tarot. I still pull every day and I do around the new moon and the full moon, deeper readings. I have a deck that lives on my ancestor altar that's for those conversations. And I have decks in every space. You know, there's a deck near my work area. There's a deck near my bed. I'm traveling right now with 5 decks and I have a lot more at home. So yeah, I'm all in.
Yeah, I love that idea of having the deck on the ancestral altar and using the decks in different places. And yeah, that's a really beautiful suggestion. I mean, it also sounds like your own spiritual calling. I mean, I guess they say in Zen that which you are seeking is causing you to seek. So
Yes. The
thing that you were looking for was calling to you already through the cards, and it found you through your Zen practice.
Yeah, and there's this channel named Mama Solaris who's on Instagram. I recently watched a video that she posted. She was like, I'm just a channel and the universe wants to speak through me. And I let it and I listen and here's what's coming. And I was blown away again by what came through. It was just like, wow, it feels like she's speaking to me in very specific ways. And I think that the tarot for me operates that way, that it allows me, like something about the relationship I have with the tarot allows something to come through that is the truest thing in that moment for me or in an offer. So when I do tarot readings for other people, which I do really enjoy getting to sit with people and just pull a card for them, I'm amazed at how the tarot guides me to know things I don't necessarily know, but it's like a way that I can channel that unspeakable knowing that happens between people. And I wonder if there will come a time when I'm like, oh, I can do this without the cards. But right now it's just like the cards are such a good guide and so dependable and also something very tangible between us. Like I love to pull the cards and ask people like, what do you see here? And here's some of the things you can know about what this card traditionally holds and how does that meet with what you're seeing? Because when someone's like, oh, I'm going through heartbreak and they look at the card and they're like, I can see the pain, you know, and I'm like, oh, wow, because everyone else thinks this card is about love or whatever. So, you know, it's like, yeah, how do we reconcile the perception, the history, and then the channel of what that person needs to receive in the moment?
Yeah, I mean, as you're saying that, it calls up for me the idea that it's so much often about changing the narrative and that these new narratives come through the cards and we can step through those doors and enter into new stories about our lives.
Exactly.
That by having a new story, we can see our lives from a different perspective and enter into a new realm.
Exactly.
And then the idea of the conduit, of course, is perfectly appropriate for wands, since that's exactly what the wands are,
yes.
Right? But so one last question before we jumped into the actually talking about the card. I was wondering if you consider yourself a witch.
I do.
Yeah. And if you could tell me or tell us a little bit about how you came to that and what that means for you.
I would say that I came to it with some resistance. You know, I'm a Virgo, I'm logical, I'm an organizer. So I like material, like measurable, tangible things. And so I'm like, oh, I like to move and be able to understand why I'm moving the way that I'm moving. And so I feel like there was a lot of resistance to the fact that often I could feel something else in motion or something else at play, or to the fact that I would speak something and into existence. I would manifest things through my words. And there came a point maybe a decade ago now where I just started asking for different kind of teachers. And I was like, I need, you know, everything I've learned up till now has been like, here's an analysis, here's some framework, here's, you know, ways of understanding yourself. But I hadn't really, you know, I'd grown up in the church environment and then I hadn't really as an adult found like, what is the spiritual practice? And yet I was finding myself to be a very spiritual being and it didn't matter if I was resisting it, it was still happening. So then I was like, okay, I need to find teachers who understand. And one of the places I turned to was somatics because I was like, at least it's science, like it's still energy and I can feel so much moving, but it's really like, here's what the feelings are. Here's the data behind it, which I found very reassuring that it's like, this is just what the body does under pressure and under trauma. And so that opened a lot of doors. And then I started seeking other methods. So I talked to priestesses. I talked to people who were daughters of Oshun. I talked to folks who were doing a variety, like a wide span of different kinds of spiritual work, calling Reiki practitioners, different kinds of healers. And the feedback I got back from a lot of them was witch. And then as I started leaning into, oh, what is the work that I do? I'm like, I cast spells and I manifest and I'm able to harness and channel in a certain way. And that's witch work. So, you know, I was just like, okay. I feel like I'm still learning it and still learning to be, not too afraid to talk about it, because in the realms that I work in and come from, there's, you know, a lot of people who are just very derisive about it or dismissive and are like, well, how can you do that? Or how can you take yourself seriously doing that or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, totally. I wouldn't if I couldn't feel what I feel and if I hadn't seen it work. But having all the proof of my own existence and the proof of my own experiments, I can't keep denying that it's happening. And instead, I'm going to spend my life harnessing it and getting good at it, honing my skills with it, finding other people who are in that practice.
So let's start off by just reminding people what this card looks like. Usually we use the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith version of the deck because that's the one that people are most familiar with. I don't know if you have it around or you can see it there, but maybe you'd like to describe it for people.
What I wanted to show, so I've been working with this new deck called the Modern Witch Tarot deck. It's one of the ones I've been traveling with.
Yeah, I love that deck.
And so I have the Ten of Wands here, which is, I love how this card looks. So it's this figure in like a kind of nifty looking shirt and skirt, trying to carry these 10 long stem wands that are much longer than the person is, clearly overburdened, off balance, hunched over, looks like they're about to fall down against this like dry landscape background. You know, I love when the card is very clear that when you look at it, you immediately are like, oh, caring too much, doing too much, and about to break, about to, you know, like just overwhelmed. That's what I've got here.
When you imagine your body in the position of the body of the person, the figure in the card, you really do almost always get a sense of what the card is about. And here, this person is looking like these sticks, these wands are very heavy. They've got their face kind of buried in them, like they can't see anything else.
Yes, they can't see any perspective other than that burden. Yes. And it looks like you can feel, I mean, you literally can feel the pain. It's like your back is hurting. Your shoulders are hurting.
You've
your
got splinters.
Your calves are hurting. your face is all scratched up. This is not good.
But one of the things that I find interesting too is that there is like a village very close. It's so close.
Yes.
They might not be able to see it there.
Yeah. So it's like there's people. There's like doors that you could go knock on.
Yeah. Like you're about to deliver. Yeah. You know, you're very close to home.
Yes.
Well, so I know that you already mentioned the Modern Witch Tarot. Do you have any other decks that you like, or was that the one that like really stood out for you?
So the decks that I'm currently working with and enjoying, I love She-Wolf Tarot, which is another one of the Serpent Fire decks. I am loving Afro Tarot, which is the artist Jesse Jumanji. And it's one of those where it's like the booklet is literally like just a 4-page foldy and it just gives you like the essential, like, you know. So I like to keep one of those on hand for just like the quick hit readings in the morning. I'm using the Crow Tarot currently as my ancestor altar tarot and really enjoying that.
I love that deck.
And then the Animal Spirit Tarot is just a delightful one. And I keep that in near my turtle. So when I go hang out with my little baby turtle, I will sit and be like, okay, what's my little animal energy that I'm drawing on today? I love the Dust to Onyx tarot deck. Mm. That one has been just a favorite. So yeah, those are all some of my faves. I love, like I said, I love Slow Hauler as a deck. And then I love the Collective Tarot deck. That was one of the first ones I ever had that I was like, this was made with a revolutionary mindset and a collective energy that was thinking differently about gender and ability. Next World Tarot is also one I love in that way. You know, it feels like it's really uplifting bodies and spirits and energies that align with what I care about. So
would you feel comfortable saying like what your ideas were for the Ten of Wands in your own deck that is emerging?
Yes. So we're still in the like production phase. So we're like, each card is basically taking some wisdom from Octavia and then partnering it with what the oracles from the crew know, the folks who have been working with tarot for a long time, and then some plant medicine. And, you know, so wands is fire, and it's really understanding like, what is the alchemy of fire and how are we harnessing, you know, I think about that it's like the sun is coming all the way through this tree, all the way through this wand, and you're holding something that is the containment of all the potential of change, but all life as well. You know, like this is another way, in the same way that our bodies are a manifestation of life, the wand is a manifestation of life, the tree is a manifestation of life. And so one of the ways that we're looking at it is, how do we talk about this overburden of life that can happen, where life can get so full and so overwhelming that you can't see further than your to-do list for the day, which may be a to-do list you love. You know, this is often my problem these days, is I have crafted my life such that I get to do mostly what I want to do with people that I really enjoy, having conversations that move me and getting to write things that I care about. And it's still hugely overwhelming just to try to move all those things, and then to be also holding my piece of responsibility for transforming the whole world. And I really feel that as a burden that I inherited very early in my life. Like, I got politicized. It was one of the first experiences that I had as an adult, was like, life is not fair. And Amadou Diallo was killed while I was in college, and I was in New York, and it was nearby. And I just suddenly was just aware, like, things are not fair. Things don't go the way they're supposed to go. And things are really difficult. And what is my responsibility for that? And how does this overburden manifest as a, almost in a form of oppression, right? That it's like, this can be oppression. It can feel like oppression. It can manifest as oppression. But one of the things that about the wands that always amazes me is there's always a choice in it, that I can choose to keep carrying, or I can choose to ask for help. And the quote from Octavia that we're using is from Wild Seed, and it says, "Sleep, you're almost asleep now, almost talking in your sleep." He reached over her and lifted Isaac from the bed. "What happened to him?" she whispered. He says, "He overextended himself, just as you did. He will heal." And it's like that form of oppression that is an intimate choice oppression, where it's like, oh, it's not like the whole world is burdening me. It's like there's something I have chosen to take on and martyr myself with. I'm harming myself, and I can heal. So the medicine is echinacea. The plant medicine is echinacea for this card. And the team, there's a whole team of folks pulling this together. So Alta Starr, Chelsea Cleveland, Lottie Spady is doing our, she's a Detroit herbalist who is providing our plant medicine guidance. And then Krista Franklin and Crystal Clarity are our art directors. And we have pulled together an incredible team of artists who love Octavia. And one of my dear friends, Sophia Santana, is like project managing. So it's an exciting team. We're geeked out with each other. AK Press is going to be publishing it, and it's going to be the first time that they've ever published a tarot deck. So that's the team working on it. Those are some of the things, the wisdoms of the card.
Wow, that sounds incredible. I love the idea of bringing in all these different kinds of medicines, like the medicines of language and story and of the echinacea, and, you know, all of the different approaches to healing that you're bringing to that card. And one thing I was also really struck by was how the tens are about the completion of a cycle, but the 10 is always, in all the suits, is always about evolving from the one is the individual to the collective. And it sounds like your own experience of, you know, politicization refers to that, of like developing a collective consciousness. And this card is very much about that. And then because it's in relation to the wands, it's in relation to like eros, activity, creativity, passion.
Yes.
And being able to access all of that energy collectively. I wanted to bring in a quote from Pleasure Activism, actually.
Yay.
Because, you know, the tens, like I said, are about change, and they're, you know, they're about the collective, but they're also the end of a cycle, right?
Exactly.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then you begin again with 10. It's kind of an evolution.
Yeah.
So is it all right with you if I read a little section from Pleasure Activism?
Totally. I'm not tired of it yet.
So this is from a section called Learn How to Change. And in it you say, "Most of us resist change we didn't spark. We feel victimized. So we try to hold tight to whatever we figure out as a way to survive. We spend too much time watching change happen with our jaws dropped, writing, "What the fuck?" over and over. It's time to learn Octavia Butler's lessons. Both that the only lasting truth is change, and that we can and must shape change. So we need to observe how we respond to change. Does it excite us so much that we struggle with stability? Or do we ignore changes until it's too late? Or fight changes that are bigger than us? It takes time and assistance to feel into and find the most strategic adaptation. So, Adrienne, I wonder if you could speak to that quote a little in relation to this card, the Ten of Wands.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that Octavia talks about is how we can either be victims of change or partners with change. And some of that is relinquishing control, like recognizing like, oh, like I'm not actually in charge. And I think that is one side of the pendulum swing of changing a relationship to change. So I think that happens. Like when we're kids, we're changing everything around us. We demand things. We say no. Like in a lot of ways, in a relatively healthy childhood, the world is shaped around the changes you want in a given day, you know? Even from very young, I pooped. Everything must change. And then you get older and you start to be socialized away from being a partner of change, that you're supposed to be obedient and you're supposed to place the needs of others in front of your own and the needs of what someone else thinks you're supposed to learn in front of your natural inclination, your curiosities. And then I think you find yourself in the grown-up world of working where you may not even be interested in the things that you're told are supposed to matter to you. And so that, you know, I see so many people where I'm like, you're in a job you don't like, surrounded by people that you don't like, doing things you don't care about and maybe aren't even that good at. And someday you're going to retire and that'll be the good part of your life. But it's a whole setup. It's a socialization, a whole setup of waste your life, waste the precious miracle of your life. You might even be achieving stuff. You might be knocking off the to-do list. You know, that's one of the things I think about the completion element of this card is like, in some cases, you're getting everything done. You know, none of those wands are falling down. Everything is being held. Everything is being moved. But where is your spirit? Where is your vision? Where is your perspective in all of it? Are you even there? And I always think about that. If you can't see, then there's a limitation to what others can see of you. Like, and when I mean that is not the physical seeing, but if you can't see and feel and ask for support, there's a way that that often means no one can even tell that you need support, that you need help, that you are struggling, that I think a lot of us watch each other moving around and all we even observe is that person's slaying, they're killing it, they're achieving a ton, they seem busy, they always seem busy, they're always too busy to reach, they're always too busy to talk to. And there becomes a burden of isolation that comes with that hyper achievement, hyper getting it all done, carrying it all, holding it all. And I often think of this card as a card of martyrdom, you know, that martyrdom is that self-generated oppression. And that piece of pleasure activism around change is like, how do we actually get comfortable with changes in our own life that we didn't create and that are not on someone's to-do list or that aren't someone's predetermined path for our lives? And I'm so grateful to be of a generation that is really disrupting what we think of as a career path. You know, I remember going to some like student career thing when I was, in school, and they were like, it used to be that people would have one career for their whole lives, and now people have two or three. And I laugh because I'm 41 and I've definitely had like 20 different paths that have all really, you know, a lot of them have really unfolded. And I've gotten to experiment with many, many things. And a theme across all of them is I'm expected to overextend as a sign of doing enough. And so one of the things, you know, when I think about the projects I'm involved in currently, I try to find the balance between alone and together work. So anything that's a public endeavor, my podcast, books that I'm putting out, trainings that I'm holding, other things, I try to figure out how can I partner with others who I can allow to actually see the real me and know the real me so that I don't always have to call for help, but they'll know to see it. And people who will let me see them so that they don't have to call for help, but I can see it, I can feel when it's needed, and they'll let it in. I wrote that section very much from my heart because I love changing things. I hate when changes are forced on me from other places. Like, I will still to this day throw a tantrum about it, and I have to have a good cry if I'm in resistance to a change and it's still going to happen, and I'm trying to get better all the time.
I mean, I feel like the wisdom you're presenting right now is really speaking to this idea of the Ten of Wands as being burdened, being oppressed, taking on too much, becoming isolated in this work. And Yes. Then the medicine or the remedy for that is relationality. I mean, it makes so much sense because the tens are about community and paying attention to what's going on with the people around you, like letting them see you. And also that honoring and acknowledging of that experience, which I feel like in white supremacist capitalist patriarchy that we're not ever supposed to feel or recognize what's going on. We're just supposed to breeze right on by like, oh, 20 people got shot today. Okay, well, we're going back to work. Like, people are dying, uprisings are happening, and we're just supposed to like keep shopping, keep going, don't think about it.
Exactly. I mean, it's such a fascinating thing to be in a society that is driven by economy. My friends at Movement Generation teach that it's like economy means the management of home. And I'm like, I wish it was that kind of economy. But it's so wild to be in a situation where the clear, clear, obvious choice right now for us would be to just pause on all things and let people work and just give people what they need to be able to be home and actually let this thing calm down. And that the commitment is so deep in this country to money that we can't actually do that. And that we are willing to risk so many lives, to let so many lives be collateral damage. But then so many people are enabling it and going along with it. And I wonder what would have happened like if this pandemic had come at a different time in our history. Because right now it's like we're 3 years into the hyper chaotic administration of Trump and his folks, where even if you're not trying to pay attention, it's just an overwhelming, hyper-burdened time to be alive, just to try to move through the day. There's someone might shoot you. There's someone might take something from, you know, take away your identity, say that trans people don't exist. Someone might close a border that your families need to cross. Like, someone might steal your children away from you and leave them in a concentration camp on the border. All of these things were happening, you know, that chaos was so daily, and every single day new things in such an immature way were being presented. And then this comes along when it's like everyone's already overburdened and our institutions are already overburdened. And then something like this comes along, which is like, fundamentally, you need to stop and you need to rest. You need to be still. And the only way to move forward is to help each other, to think about each other's safety. I mean, this is the ultimate Ten of Wands condition, is we are self-generating the problem now that we are in. This is no longer a set of burdens we need to carry in this way. And at this point, I think a lot of us are feeling like, where will the help come from? Because normally you turn towards those who are elected officials and who are in those representative positions to say we need better policies. But what do you do when you've already tried to impeach and remove the person who's making the bad decisions? And then so many people are feeling so helpless about the electoral system that we still may not even be able to get this person out with the mechanisms we have available. I'm like, that's my voter organizing strategy at this point, is just being like, help, just help. Like, even if you don't believe in it, just help someone else who will be directly impacted. Like, you don't have to, I know, you know, it's a massive compromise, and I'm not asking you to deny the compromise at all, but just think of it as an act of help instead of an act of political home. And that might make it a little bit more bearable. Like, you know, I kind of am like, how do we send pictures of here's someone whose life will be markedly different if you can just help in this moment?
Yeah, that's really important and so deeply related to this card. In the interest of time, though, I kind of want to push forward and talk about how in the Thoth deck, it's called oppression. And that is very appropriate. So Crowley talks about this card. So Crowley is one of the co-creators of this deck, the theoretical mastermind behind the card. So Crowley talks about this card as source detached from its spiritual sources and a kind of rampant will that has become corrupted by its lust for result. And I was wondering if we could talk about that a little, like talk about what oppression is and how it relates to this card. I mean, if we talk about oppression, resistance is always implied. However, normally we define resistance essentially with the master's language. Like it's adversarial, it's fighting, it's guns, it's weapons. Like he, the master, gets to define how power works, what is oppression, what is resistance. But I feel like you offer a counter narrative to all of that. Like two things you talk about a lot. Tony Cade Bombera's quote, writing is a tool for the revolution. Our task is to make the revolution irresistible. And so I'm wondering how all of that, making the revolution irresistible, relates to the idea of oppression and maybe our response to it.
I'm just going to say some of the thoughts that leapt to mind in that question. One is that in the longest long view, oppression is that which removes us from right relationship to each other and to the earth. And when I think about the lineage, you know, like all of us go back to some indigenous people. As far as I know, none of us are aliens, though if you are, holler at your girl, I want to know. But of humans, all humans are indigenous to some place. There's some lineage that goes back and has a root system somewhere. And in that original relationship, there were original instructions that everybody was given for here's how you relate to this place. And however you believe you receive those instructions, it might have been direct transmission. It might have been listening deeply to the plants and the water and the cycles of the seasons around you. But there was a way of being in relationship that said, there's an amount that you can take here. There's a way to ask for permission for it. And there's an enoughness. You can be satisfied. You can satisfy and survive. And you can have enough time to harvest, to plant, to harvest, to notice the beauty, to celebrate, to sleep, to hibernate, you know, to basically have the full natural related cycle. And to me, the journey from that place to slavery is one of the most important ways we can understand the breaking of right relationship and the creation of effort that can't be really, you know, it's like you're literally taking people from the place where they have a spiritual relationship and knowledge of the land and bringing them to another place where they're just supposed to labor with no life in sight, with only death and separation and pain in sight. And somehow that food is supposed to be edible, that whatever comes is supposed to be still a blessed resource, you know? And I think there we see the destruction of so many species and so many ways of creating and so many ways of being in relationship. It's like, of course, because that aspect of supremacy and manifest destiny and hunger and greed and capitalism, it all combined into this toxic concoction that deeply disconnected people from any relationship to place. So now a huge number of people on the planet eat food that they could never source, that They have no idea what it was treated with, where it actually came from. It's packaged in ways that are not aligned with the earth. And in so many ways, every single day, we say to the earth, I don't care about our relationship. I don't care about you. And we say to the people who are still working, you know, right now, as we have this conversation, fires are raging in California, and there are workers in the fields with masks over their face still trying to harvest this country's food supply. And that says everything about, you know, slavery to me has not ended. It has shape-shifted. And Holocaust has not ended. It has shape-shifted. Like, there's these ways of continuously breaking the right relationship, and they shape-shift, but they don't go away. And I think they don't go away because we don't turn and face and say, this is what we are doing. This is how we are surviving. We're so out of alignment. And I think that's also why so much of our conflict happens, because I think when you are tethered to earth, when you are connected to the universe in that way, your sense of belonging is so intact that you don't have to constantly be looking for the right wrongness of those embattlements. And I think all this territorialism and, you know, dominance culture comes out of that lack of belonging. And I feel like the card is an invitation back towards belonging, because when you turn and ask for help, this is how oppressed people have survived, is you turn and ask for help. And even if you are 3,000 miles away from the land that you know, in another person, you can find the sacred, that divine connection, that someone can still hold you and you can still feel, right, I'm still a human here amongst humans. And I have found that, I have experienced that so many times when I was like in an experience of oppression. And, you know, we laugh about this, but like Black people walk through the airport and we nod at each other. Like, there's a way of just even like the smallest affirmations can help us move through situations where we might be mistreated or are being mistreated. And right now, I think we see that, where even in this pandemic moment that we had these massive uprisings, is to me absolutely that joyful resistance. It's like, I don't know if you noticed this, but to me, the pattern from uprising to uprising was that they were joyful, that people were dancing and chanting and singing, that the invitation was to come and bring your children, to come and bring your whole selves, to come and be creative in the action. And that what looked like the rioting, you know, that kind of energy of riot or that energy of destruction only entered when the state came to disrupt. But what was coming from the people, what was coming from movement, was this desire for each other that was fueled, I think, by this pandemic, right? We've been withheld from each other. We long for each other, and we long for each other's justice. We will not let people be killed, even in absentia, even in their absence. We will show up for each other. And if anything gives me uncomplicated hope in this time, it is the fact that those uprisings just happened and that they continue to happen, and that we don't give up on the power of going to the streets and of writing to each other and resisting. And we are 4 years into a devastation as a country, and still people are like, we're not giving in to white supremacy and white nationalism. We're not going to stay off the street, even though we're up against armed militia, you know, militarized police officers who have been trained to put their knees on our necks. We're still going to come out as families and take care of each other and create community in that way. And that says a huge amount about our spirit and our longing to connect with each other. And my hope is that we're able to get Trump out of office, that we can start doing the work of holding Biden and Harris accountable to some of the major shifts that need to happen so we never end up in a situation like this again. And I'm really interested in what this next 20, 30 to 50 years do in terms of putting us in right relationship with the planet, because I do think that so many of the social oppression issues we're dealing with would be resolved by us getting back into a right relationship with land and food and the culture that comes from caring for land and food. And I'm really interested in, you know, I think Emergent Strategy is interested in that, you know, how do we get back in right relationship with nature and with with pleasure, which it's a pleasure to be in nature. So yeah, long answers. That's what I do.
No, it's such a great answer. I mean, the word for me that really stuck out in what you were saying was the sense of belonging and the sense of care and rediscovering relationship, relationality, specifically to the planet, and then bringing joy and bringing all of ourselves. You use that phrase. And you know, in the show, we're always trying to ground the knowledge in the tarot, in our tarot practice. It's just part of the ethos of the show. And it really does speak to the Nine of Wands, which we discussed a few weeks ago. You know, this burdensome, oppressive force that you're carrying. Maybe you're burnt out, or like you've got too many projects, or you're feeling burdened, like you really want to complete something, but you're overwhelmed. And so the antidote for that is to cultivate belonging so that you can share, so that you can share the burden and you can get a break with that and people can check in on you and cultivate right relationship. I mean, I think that's so hard when you're feeling really burdened and really overwhelmed and like there's so many projects, like to stop and slow down and say, okay, I'm really going to prioritize being in right relationship, because under capitalism, we're really scared to do that. And we think that if I do that, then everything's going to fall apart.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes it does, you know, like I keep laughing about this, even though it's like laugh crying, but I always tell people, like, if you go on a sabbatical, I do sabbatical coaching and like tell people to take breaks and stuff. And it's like, don't worry, the world's not going to fall apart just because you step away. Like, you're going to be okay. And then I go on a sabbatical and the world fell apart. Like, everything fell apart, you know, from the closest things to me to the furthest things away. Like, everything actually did fall apart. And there was crisis and crisis. And I continually had to keep making the choice to be like, is it okay? I feel almost emotional at talking about it, but it's just like I had to ask people I really trusted to whom I belong and who belong to me. Is it okay for me to still rest even though everything's falling apart? And I know you all are caring more now. Is it okay that I still rest? And the answer, overwhelming answer, was a resounding yes. It's okay. We need you to rest. We don't judge the fact that you're doubting your rest. We don't judge the fact that you're resting. None of it. It's okay. And I find that belonging for me now is defined by relationships that are authentic enough for my doubt to be present, my out of control to be present, my emotionality to be present, my irrationality to be present. Like, I need to be able to be a full human being and to go through all of it. And there's times when I also need to be able to say, I'm carrying too much. I don't think I can put it down. I don't think anyone's going to hold it, which is, you know, I used to think that was just a Virgo oldest child thing, but I'm like, actually, a lot of leaders I know, it's not that we think it's going to fall apart. It actually will. Like, we haven't learned the part of belonging that includes sharing the skill development. So a lot of times we get the rock star development path where it's like, oh, you seem to have some leadership skills. Now we're going to put you in charge of everything. You're going to handle everything and learn how to do it all. And then it's going to be very hard to hand it over. And so I think about more and more, how do I construct spaces for people to learn in community or in collective ways with each other, so that you're not, oh, I'm as an individual going off to become great at this, but we all together are learning how to hold and share these skill sets. I'm also really interested in how we learn skills that meet our natural capacity. So in the Ten of Wands scenario, you can't tell how many wands would actually be the right size for this person. And there might even be just a different arrangement of them that would feel right. And the help doesn't necessarily mean someone's got to take the burdens away from you. Sometimes it's just saying, hey, carry two at a time. Hey, turn them all horizontal and you can hold them in your arms like a child and you can support your back. Hey, pause and just like do a deep bend, really like relieve those lower back muscles, you know? Hey, can I rub your back? Hey, can I rub your feet? You know, like, can we pause and have some tea at my house for a little moment? You know, there's just a million ways that are not just replacing ourselves that allow us to be unburdened.
Okay, so in the Cosmic Tarot by Jean Hewitts, there's a description of the Ten of Wands that goes, the Ten of Wands presents an image of a disaster, a world burning, a person caught in the flames, wrecked buildings give an unmistakable picture of war. Saturn, considered by many to be a baleful influence, is visible through the clouds of smoke. This quote reminded me so much of the world we're introduced to in Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower, for which you have a podcast. So I imagine each card as a world we're walking into. Like each card is a threshold or a doorway into a specific world that spirit wants to show us, to speak to us about something. In the same way that, for instance, Octavia Butler is using this world because she wants to speak to us about something, because she wants to address something. So if we imagine the Ten of Wands as a doorway into the world introduced to us at the beginning of Parable of the Sower, what do you think spirit and what is Octavia trying to discuss with us in that world?
There's so many things that come to mind, but there's one Earthseed verse that says drowning people sometimes die fighting off their rescuers. Basically, that you can be so committed, you can be desperately clawing for life, but unable to understand that someone's actually trying to even offer you help, and you attack that person. And I think the threshold of this moment is we have to learn to see each other differently. We have to learn to understand each other and understand our relationships in a different way. And I keep coming back to this, like our relationships are a place for our spiritual work, or our relationships are a place for our politics. And I think what I mostly mean inside of that is whatever it is we believe to be how things are supposed to be in the world, our relationships are where we need to practice those beliefs. And in this moment, I think we can take each other for granted. We can be so tired of each other. You know, we've been around, you know, you've been, a lot of people have been with their same crew of people now for months, or all alone for months. And, you know, during my sabbatical, I went the longest I've ever gone without human contact in my life. And there's just ways inside of that that I took for granted how important it was to just be able to Zoom or FaceTime. It's like, oh, Zoom, rolling my eyes. And I'm like, you know, there was a moment where I sat and I was like, could I imagine having done this when there was no video call available? And could I use that to stop taking it for granted and to stop taking the connection available inside of it for granted? And instead, yeah, just be in a place of like gratitude, gratitude that people want to talk to me, gratitude that people want to hear me. There's so many things that I think we can look at as burdens because we are not, again, in right relationship with them. And what are the boundaries that we need to have in place so that we can be in right relationship? Prentice Hemphill is one of my teacher friends who has also a new podcast, Finding Our Way, that I got to be on recently. But Prentice teaches us that boundaries are the distance at which I can love you and me simultaneously. And I think about that so much in relationship to this threshold we're on. Right now, it's all about learning boundaries, right relationship. What is a safe relationship to be in? How do we be in right relationship with strangers? How do we be in right relationship with people that we love who have different comfort with risk than we do? How do we get very transparent and learn to discuss all of those things? And what Lauren Olamina is up to in the parables is also that, figuring out, like, I have a destiny. Who is on the path to this destiny with me? How do I let go by the people who are not interested in this destiny and stop trying to convince them? And how do I be an invitation to those who will join me, whatever they may look like? One of the things that she teaches us is you don't know who you're going to be in the apocalypse with. You don't know who you're going to necessarily end up with. It may not be who you expect. You know, even if you're like, I know people who are like, I'm part of an intentional community, but because of the pandemic, I'm stranded over in this whole other place. And it's like, yeah, you don't actually know. So the guidance of that is you have to develop the skills of community such that they can manifest wherever you land. And I try to do that wherever I am, manifest and sort of assess, like, how politically aligned am I in this space with other people here? Who do I feel like I can trust? Who do I not feel like I can trust? Who do I want or need to educate? Who can I learn from? And as often as possible, trying to move towards mutuality in all those places. And then in a very technical sense, I think about survival skills. You know, like, what do we all know about surviving? And it's kind of amazing how little we are taught, you know, for all the schooling that we do, how very little we're taught about surviving. While I was on sabbatical, my sister did a whole series of interviews for the How to Survive the End of the World podcast that are very, like, technical survival skills. And I think it's some of the best work that's ever happened on the podcast because it's so tangible. But it also makes people so aware of, like, dang, I don't, like, if the water doesn't come out of the faucet, I don't know what to do. Like, if electricity doesn't come out of the wall, I don't know what to do. You know, if I get evicted, I don't know what to do. The American experiment is like you're always two paychecks away from broke, but because of credit cards, everyone thinks they're good. And right now, all that is being unveiled. The actual economics of our country are being unveiled. The actual precarity that most people are in is being unveiled. And a lot of people are realizing that they don't know as much about survival as they thought they did as individuals. And simultaneously, it's being unveiled that in community, almost everyone knows something. And together, people are figuring out these ways to survive that they didn't expect. I see all these emerging pods that are like, now we're homeschooling our kids, or now we're doing stuff that we did not plan, we did not expect, and yet we're pretty great at.
Right. So being able to utilize the skills that you have in order to be able to create community wherever you go, using those skills to create community and to create connection, that is the thing that leads you towards your destiny. And that creation of community, creation of connection through each of our individual wills, through our own unique talents and skills, is ultimately what sustains our collective life. And that is the story of the ones, the story of life in community.
Yeah. And like, being willing to let go of folks who are not on the path to destiny with you, I think is also important and for this moment. And I feel that, like, when I think about white nationalists and people are like, well, are you fighting for everyone's freedom? Or, like, you know, those kind of questions. And I'm like, I want everyone to make it. But if you are a, you know, vitriolic, racist person who hates my existence, I'm not going to slow down for you to catch up at this point, right? At this point, I feel like there's enough has happened. You've had enough exposure, enough choices. Beyonce exists. Like, you can see that superiority, it shows up in all kinds of ways or whatever. It's a false paradigm. And so now you're making a choice. You're making a choice, and I am making a choice to live. I want to make a choice to get back in right relationship with the planet. And I think the best work I can do now is to make that choice and move towards that destiny, which I think is our collective destiny, and maybe make it more appealing. You know, that's what Tony Cade said for us to do. I'm writing as much as I can, as fast as I can. I write every day, all the time. I'm trying constantly to write compelling futures and write everything I know about how we get there.
It's so compelling, this idea of leaving the people who don't want to come with you. Just like being like, okay, if you don't want to, you're going to live your life and you're going to do it your way. But instead, just focusing on people who do want to and being in right relationship with the world that does want you back.
Yeah. You know, and I think that there's, because there are people you fight for, right? Like, I fight for my family. I fight for us to understand each other. But, you know, there are family members of mine who I know are Trump supporters, and I'm not organizing them at this point. You know, like, I'm just sort of like, okay, I got to keep moving here. There's also a way that's like, you can't force a change on anyone. And this is the earliest training I have from harm reduction is like, when it's time to create a change, each person has to make the decision for themselves that they want that change and that they're ready to move towards that change. And I hate it because it would be much easier for me if I could just force everyone to do things that I want them to do, right? This is the benevolent dictator problem, right? Where I'm like, oh, like, I think I've got a great idea for how we could all live in harmony, but I can't force it. Even if I think it's such a great idea, it's not a radical thing to try to force other people to do what I want them to do. It's a much more radical thing to understand that there are many, many, many ways to be a human being, many, many, many ways to get in right relationship. And I barely know any of them. I'm a student myself, relinquishing that kind of control and instead letting my body, my life be an invitation. That's the best I know. That's the best I know to do.
That is so beautiful and I think really inspiring. And I hope that we're all able to take the wisdom from that and live that in our own lives and practices, which brings me to my very last question, which is, if this card comes up in a reading, what are some ritual actions or spells that you could do to make the most of it? For instance, I like Mary Kay Greer's suggestion to work with ancestors to release any genetic or familial patterns that don't serve the greatest good. But I'm wondering what comes up for you.
Yeah. One of the pieces that comes up for me is to create a map of people who you actually trust to help you. Who do you actually trust to know that you need help? Who do you trust to see you in your vulnerability? And by map, you know, you get to be the treasure point. You get to be the heart of the map or the center of the map. And you can place people as close to you or as far from you as you feel like they are relative to that trustworthiness, that vulnerability. But I think that being able to do that work so that you understand the wealth or the richness, the fullness, the abundance of support that's available, or the dearth, right? If it's like, oh, there's no one on my map, no wonder I'm struggling so much. Like, I need to cultivate relationship and I need to show myself to someone. And it's the counterintuitive thing because you know, when you're struggling, I think most of us kind of want to hide that, keep it to ourselves. Although, you know, we are getting more comfortable showing it. Social media is confusing because it's hard to know the line between showing and performing. But I think that we're trying to learn how to walk that with some integrity. But I do think still that impulse is like, I don't want anyone to see that I'm kind of fucked up right now. And the counterintuitive move is to show it, to tell someone. And I have this practice that I call 1000% honesty, where I practice usually one person at a time, bringing to that degree where I go out of my way to make sure I'm telling them the truth and that I'm being honest when it's uncomfortable and I don't want to, and it's not politically, you know, there's times when I'm just like, ugh, one of my biggest problems, I'll be like, I already got support from you. So I don't want to ask for more support because I already got some support from you and I didn't get to give you back some yet. And there's that transactional nature that's still, you know, in me because I grew up in capitalism and still I'm living in it. And I'm in such trusting relationships right now that I can say to someone, like, I need help, and they can tell me they have it or they don't. And they know that I've got other people to call on too. And that just feels like such a, I feel like the safest emotionally that I've ever felt. And which means I'm getting to feel all my feelings to a much more complete, whole degree. You know, I used to be like, I'm having a feeling, I'm going to cry for like 2 minutes. I didn't, not measure, but it was just like, I would cry for 2 minutes, be like, whew, that was a big feeling. Get it together, go be around humans. And now it's like, I will cry indefinitely about something and then the next day cry some more about it and then still be sad. And I'm like, oh, this feeling is like a 24-hour feeling. This feeling is a 6-month feeling. And, you know, some of this stuff is just like long sustained historical ancestral feeling. So having that map for me, pairing the map with the 1000% honesty, really inviting in and trying to have like, I want an abundance of wealthy, deep relationship close to me that I can call on and who can call on me. And if you're bonus rounding it, if you have people in your life that you're in pod with right now or in relationship with right now, it might be good to do that mapping together. It's like, am I on your map? Like, cause you're on mine, you know? And I'd love for that to be mutual if it can be. Just awkward questions sometimes, but on the other side of asking them, you're always closer. So those are my practices.
I want to, as soon as we're done here, I want to go do that.
Go do your map. Go do your map. It's going to be lovely. You'll be excited.
Yeah, that seems so nourishing. I love that. And I feel that it really will help me feel less burdened, less in the angsty Ten of Wands and more in the beauty of it.
Yeah, everybody needs a team. Like, everyone needs community, not just in a theoretical, amorphous way. Like, you need tangible community that you know you can call on. Everyone needs a kitchen counter inner circle. You know, like, humans are designed for intimacy. This idea occurred to me this year that I've been repeating, which is we're all born into someone else's hands. Like, that's the nature of our species, right? Other creatures are born and they just drop out and they're expected to start walking right away or like break out of an egg and run across a beach. But we are born so fragile that we have to be held immediately. We're born still attached to another, and we have to intentionally be detached. Like, we are a particular kind of species and we have to act accordingly.
Oh my gosh, I am twinkling so much. And I think that's the most beautiful note to end on ever.
We made it.
But you know, I think that a lot of our listeners are going to want to really obsessively learn every single thing there is to know about you and to read every single thing you've ever written, to listen to every single word you've ever said. So where should they go to find out?
Good question. So I have a website that is rinky dinky. I'm going into about to upgrade to like be an adult website. But it's adrianmariebrown.net, and my blog is there and sort of an archive of other interviews and things like that. And then akpress.org is my publisher where you can buy all my books. And then I do two podcasts right now, How to Survive the End of the World with my sister Autumn and Octavia's Parables with Toshi Regan. So you can dive deep. There's tons and tons of stuff.
Well, Adrian, yeah. Thank you. It's been such a deep and profound pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Oh, and one other place, Emergent Strategy, it is a collective. Emergent Strategy is a collective. And our Instagram page, we've been doing a series of live events that we then post there, which are really beautiful conversations around emergence in this moment. So yeah, that might be a first stop and then check out the rest. But yeah, thank you so much for having me here, letting me play and dive deep on tarot. I really was geeked to get this invitation, and thanks for what you do and uplifting this technology for others.
I'm so honored to know that you even listened to this podcast, and seriously could not be more grateful to you for being a part of it with us. Thank you.
Yay.
Okay, listeners. So that's it. That's it for the episode, and that is it for the season. The one season will be coming back to you in, I guess, probably about 6 to 8 weeks. But in the meantime, if you're going to miss us, then you can always sign up for our Wands Workshop, where we'll be talking all the time on our social media group, and we'll be doing weekly activities and tarot spreads and journal entries. We'll also be doing some live calls for that. It's all about focusing your energy and accessing your creativity and managing change, which we've heard today all about why that's so important. So I hope that you can join us for that. Also, if you're going to miss me, then you can read my book, Initiated, Memoir of a Witch, anywhere books are sold. You can also join me for my new moon and full moon workshops, which I hold online. And you can find out about that by visiting my Instagram page at Oracle of LA or my website, oracleoflosangeles.com. You can book an appointment with me. And I also wanted to say, you guys, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us this season. I've loved connecting with you. I've loved hearing from you on my socials. And I've loved talking about this beautiful subject with you. And I'm so grateful that you're here. I'm just so grateful for all of your spirits. I just love knowing that you're out there. You keep me strong. And I hope that you keep yourselves very safe and happy and nourished over the coming weeks, and we can't wait to come back to you with the suit of swords next season, the suit of problems, and figuring out how to solve them. Who doesn't need to know how to do that? Anyway, love you guys, can't wait to connect with you again, and we'll see you soon.
Between the Worlds is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, with editing help from Jiha Lee. Our podcast icon is created by Maria Minnis, aka Tiny Parsnip, links in the show notes, and our font is created by Leah Hayes. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a sweet review and or posting your favorite parts. You can tag us at Oracle of LA or Between the Worlds Podcast. Thank you.
Margaret says, try me, try me. This is a torch song.